All right, well, let's start this meeting with a call to order and a roll call.
Ms. Arnold.
I'm here.
Ms. Blake. She was here, we lost her, I'll come back. Mr. Barbeau.
Here.
Ms. Bright.
Here.
Okay, Ms. Compton.
I'm here.
Mr. Enns.
Here.
Mr. Gibson.
Here.
Mr. Hammond.
Here.
Mr. Heller.
Here.
Mr. Pichon.
Here.
Mr. Storton.
Here.
And Mr. Gomez.
Here.
Sheila, what happened?
If you're still muted.
Yes, she's here. She's muted. Sheila, you're muted. Let me try to unmute you.
Can you hear me now?
Yes. Okay. Thank you, Ms. Blake. Sorry. We have a quorum, President Gomez.
All right. Let's go to public comment for items not on the agenda.
Okay, at this moment, we are taking comment for items not on the agenda. If you wish to make a comment, just hit raise hand. Or if you're on the phone, I think you can hit *9. Mr. President, we have no public comment.
Okay, and we'll move on to item 4. Brooks, would you like to give your executive director's report?
Yes, please. Okay, can everybody see the PowerPoint?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. You see at the beginning of your packet, the credit card statement and the expenditures listed. Normally we have 1 or 2 months, but there's 3 months this time. So it's a little bit more as far as the total amount, but I think that everything's in order. But if you have any questions or comments, please let us know. I also want to mention that we're required to do, and I've said this a couple other times, but I just want to remind you of it because it's a big deal for 1383. The state requires us to update our integrated waste management plan every 5 years, and we have to communicate with all the jurisdictions and the representatives from that jurisdiction. So we formed a local task force, and we've been meeting with them, and in those areas in blue are the things we have to highlight regarding our integrated waste management plan. But we're also using that group as a technical advisory committee because that's in our JPA and it's a mandate of 1383 that we have this. And so we're not only communicating the updating the plan, but we're introducing the ideas that we're rolling out with 1383 to this group. And just so you can see, we've got good representation from everybody, including the community service districts. So everybody's been participating well, and I think this is really going to help with rolling out 1383. And just to update you on the plastics legislation that passed this year, or what didn't pass, probably the biggest one was 541080, which was a dual bill, and it required all single-use packaging to ultimately phase into being recyclable or compostable, and it came very near to passing. I think it was 4 votes shy, but it did not pass. AB 793 was a little more focused. It's on beverage containers, and it goes from 15 to 25 to 50% recycled content by 2030. That did pass. So in the next couple of years, beverage containers are going to have to contain recycled plastic. And then there was a ballot initiative that didn't make the signature run this election, but it's going to be on for 2022. And it's a little more lengthy than this, but the bottom line is there's basically up to a 1%, 1 penny fee on all plastic items, packaging or bottles or whatever. And it is a styrofoam ban, not polystyrene. It's very specific on that. And that's going to be on the ballot. And I've seen some of the polls behind that. And there was a majority of citizens seem to favor this. So I think that's got a strong chance of passing in 2022. And if you have any questions about anything, just please interrupt me as I go through this. Another one of the things I want to talk about as far as solid waste regulations in California, this we pulled together every bill that's been passed for the last 35 years. And so here they are individually, and I know you can't really see those, but just to let you know, they do about 15 bills a year are actually passed. So the total is actually 509 in the past 35 years. And so the point here is that California is a place where we get a lot of regulations and we get a lot of oversight from the state on solid waste and recycling issues. And I see that trend continuing, and we're going to discuss that in item 18 as well, but just want to give you a little background on what California is doing. And also remind you that we serve on the legislative task force, which there are about four times as many bills proposed every year that are actually adopted. So we have a lot of work every year analyzing those bills and giving comment as they're going through the process. And SB 1383, the language was finally approved 10 days ago or so. And so it's going to take effect January 2022, 13 months away. And so there's quite a bit to do there. We did see some letters requesting relief from various groups, but they're asking for the coordination of permitting between the water district or the air board or CalRecycle, additional funding, or even postpone the deadlines. And Rob would maybe be able to comment more on this than me, but I don't see this having a whole lot of traction at this point. So I think the regulations are going to be on schedule, and what we see today is going to be happening 13 months from now. And then CalRecycle already rolled out the model ordinances and programs and did a webinar, and Rob's firm was heavily involved in doing this. So we're hiring an expert here, but they're rolling out basically six, as we mentioned before, six new programs and seven new ordinances are going to be mandated under 1383. And so going back to that local task force, we're coordinating already. And so I think we're going to have a plan to roll this out come January. And the revenue or the fee audit that R3 was doing on the 2% franchise fee and the $3 a ton landfill fee, that's completed now. They've gotten with every licensed hauler. And so right now we're reviewing the draft reports internally. And then once we get the comment back to R3, we're asking them to present that in the spring to the board and just have a short 5 or 10 minute presentation on the total findings and not specifically single out anybody who overpaid or underpaid or people we owe money to maybe, but just the general outcome. And then specifically, we can look at how the board wants to react to that. And then we're going to ask R3 for recommendations on improving the clarity and simplifying the process, because right now there's some interpretation and there's some complications to it, and we think we can improve that. And as we look at funding 1383, it would be a good time to do those simultaneously. If we're going to fix this and improve it, we may need to increase the fees along with it. So it'd be a good time to look at all that, and R3 as our consultant could help us give recommendations on that. And that's, and the, unless there are any questions about it, that's all I have for the oral report.
I'm not seeing any questions. If anybody does have them, they can certainly chime in. All right. Seeing none, that's moving on to the consent agenda. First off, do we have any public comment on anything on the consent?
Okay, if you wish to make comment on items on the consent agenda, please hit raise your hand. I see you, Eric, give me 1 second. Let's see. Okay, so Eric, I'm gonna have to promote you to allow you to talk because your Zoom is out of date. Just make sure you don't have your video on. Okay, and you should be able to unmute yourself now, Eric.
Okay, this is Eric Greening. And actually, my comment was actually a question relative to the executive director's report just given. And that has to do with, is it expected that the implementation plan for SB 1383 will have any impact on local control of land application of sewage sludge? And I have another related question, which is anyone on the staff beginning to track disposable plastic masks as they move into the waste stream and enter the environment? They are certainly definitely getting there as a sort of an artifact of 2020. But my big question is SB 1383 in its implementation likely to have any impact on the ability of our county or in other localities to maintain local control over land application of sewage sludge? And thank you.
Thank you, Eric. Brooks, you got any answers to that one?
I don't know of anything. I don't know of anything that's going to be on sewage sludge in 1383. Rob, you would know specifically.
There was a previous draft of the bill that had a number of parameters around land application. The state is pursuing a separate regulatory process for land application of biosolids, and so they removed it from the 1383 requirements, but it is definitely an issue that they're looking at and trying to manage to prevent bad outcomes from a water quality perspective.
Okay, is that going to be local control?
Yes, there will be some impacts to local control likely to that.
Okay. And then regarding the mask, I don't know of any local tracking of any of the solid waste agencies or, companies on that, and we're not.
Okay. That was it for public comment.
Okay. Bring it back to the board. Does anybody on the board have any questions on this consent? Do they want to pull any items, or do we want to just make an...
Chairman Goldman, Ms. Hammond would like to have a staff report, verbal staff report on item 9, in particular, the corrective actions found by the audit.
Okay, so do you want to pull the item for discussion? Because I don't know what's going to come out of the report.
Not so much for discussion, but just staff's report and comment about the corrective actions that were recommended.
Okay.
Yeah,
is that going to be in response to 9 and 10? Because that's two different audits.
Well, the findings from 18-19 were corrected and did not show up in 19-20.
Gotcha.
So, and I put together a slide on that in case this came up. So they basically had three findings that were two issues, and they were that we were not reconciling the monthly statements with the bank, and then we had no year-end closing procedures for payables and receivables. In other words, those items that came in after June 30th were not being put back on that year appropriately. And so again, these items were actually corrected before the audit even occurred, but they did occur in 18-19, and then they were corrected, and they were not found. There were no findings in the 19-20 audit. Does that help you, John?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I want to make sure that, what they found in 18-19 has now been corrected and moving forward, everything's back on track. That's essentially it. That's why I asked for, item 9. Thank you.
Yep, that is correct.
That's all I had, Aaron.
Thanks, John.
Oh, Aaron, I have a question about item 10, if I could ask staff of that.
Go ahead.
So, Brooks, I'm curious about the $207,000 delta for the next year. And I'm wondering, I realize we have 3.3 million in reserves, but do you have a plan or idea about how you're going to replenish the reserves from the 207 that's the delta for this year, this past year?
Yeah, well, I think what had been happening, the normal process was that we would be under budget for several years, and then we would have a bigger expense like this strategic plan and to refurbish the HHW sites and those kind of things. And then so it's kind of this little ebb and flow as I've looked through the past 5 or 10 years. So I think this is kind of normal, but we went ahead and you can see from this slide that we had budgeted 2.9 million, but we only spent 2.4 million. In other words, as soon as COVID started hitting and we started seeing there potentially being an impact to the budget and a recession, we deferred expenses and tried to reserve money. And so I think we were successful because we only ended up being over 200,000 over versus another 600,000.
So in other words, you see some vacillation from year to year.
Yes,
in this
absolutely.
Range.
Yep. Okay. It's kind of what we've done is we built up a close to a $4 million reserve, and then we spend half a million or so, and then we build it back up again.
Okay. That answers my question. Thank you.
Aaron, I'd like to make a motion if you're ready.
Yeah, go ahead.
President Gomez, did you take public comment on consent?
Yes.
Thank you.
I'd like to go ahead and make a motion then to approve consent calendar items 5 through 13.
John Pashon, second.
All right, we got a first and a second. Can we get a roll call on this?
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Pashon?
Yes.
Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Ms. Blake?
Yes.
Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Bright?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
Yes.
Mr. Enns?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
President Gomez?
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously.
Yes, but I'm on the phone with somebody.
Okay, we're on to the regular agenda, item number 14. Do you have any public comment on the regular agenda?
Okay, if you wish to make public comment on items on the regular agenda, please raise your hand. Okay. Okay, Eric. You should be allowed to be able to unmute yourself.
Were you talking to me?
Yes, you're ready to go.
Eric Greening, yeah. And is this the time to speak to item 18?
Yes, on the regular agenda.
All right. First of all, I would like to say I share all of the thoughts expressed by Janine Rands in her correspondence, and I'd like to also share an additional concern with the prospect of actual dismantlement of the IWMA, and that is that it is not responsible for the IWMA to make a board to make such a decision, or for any entity within the IWMA, any city or county or the CSDs to make such a decision until they have a hearing of their own to explore the financial implications to their taxpayers of the actual cost of having to comply with all of the state and federal regulations as an individual entity and depart from the economy of scale that is inherent in the existence of the IWMA. I'm adding economic issues, should we say taxpayer stewardship issues, to the environmental issues, the public health issues, so ably explored by Janine Rands. And I would also just note that this is an added burden. Not only it would be an added burden, not only financially, but in terms of staff time and expertise to those local jurisdictions at a time when the tax base for local jurisdictions is shrinking. We don't know how long the economic crisis spawned by the viral response will last, but we do know there has been a massive movement of public spending from local businesses, which collect sales taxes, to online platforms from which no sales taxes are issued. And as a result, most local jurisdictions, cities, county, et cetera, are slimming down and having to make very painful cuts. And the last thing anyone should be considering at this time, it would be absolutely reckless, would be to dissolve an agency which embodies an economy of scale in meeting state and local requirements and essentially foisting those costs and those staffing needs back on local jurisdictions that are currently losing revenue very quickly, and we don't know for how long. So that I add that concern to Janine Rand's concerns, and thank you.
I got that. Okay. And then it looks like I have John Ryan.
Yes, this is John Ryan. I'm a member of the Governors Association. I manage the Coal Canyon Processing Facility, and I'd like to take this time to comment on the proposed strategic plan that your staff is asking you to provide guidance on today. The thing that's concerning to me is that none of our local haulers, MRF operators, or landfill people have actually been contacted for any kind of input on this document. It's a five-year document that's going to be developing cost-effective programs for the for a countywide situation. And again, my concern is that none of us have been contacted on any of these items that's on this strategic plan. And I'm done.
Okay, thank you. And that is it for public comment.
Okay. Item number 15 is a recognition resolution for Jeff Lee. For the sake of time, I don't know if there's a legal obligation to read the whole resolution. I would prefer not to.
There is not.
Okay. Then anybody that would like to recognize or see that recognition, they're more than happy to read the resolution in the agenda packet. He did serve the board for quite a long time, and he did a great job, and I appreciate leadership that he had, and now where we're moving on to. I'm assuming that he got a similar plaque to what I got, which is a cool little, looks like a refurbished piece of wood with some cool stamping, very, what I would assume is low cost and high efficiency of recyclability, which I'm a big fan of. So thank you for whoever put that together. Item number 16 is my own service of recognition resolution, which again, I'm not going to read for myself, other than to say thank you all for appointing me to this position. It's something that I've been passionate about for a long time, and this will be my last meeting, so thanks. I would show you that little plaque thing, but it's in the other room. That means I'd have to get up and take even more time for you guys to. Mr. Enns, you got your hand raised, but you're mic is muted.
Okay, I just want to say thank you. I know that I stepped down and let you go past me, and looking at the history here, and to thank Jeff for his part. He inherited Mike Giancola, and you inherited COVID-19, a year and a half term, and Zoom, and I think you did a great job. Thank you very much.
There's the cool picture.
Mr. Chairman, Bruce Gibson, to add my thanks to both of you fine gentlemen. It has indeed been challenging, and you have maneuvered us ably through extraordinary times. So thank you, and I hope you enjoy a respite from your labors here. Take care.
Yeah, Aaron, John Hammond, again, ditto. You both, you and Jeff, great leadership through the last couple of years. Huge rough water that we went through. And again, appreciate your service. Thank you.
Thank you, John.
This is John Prashan. Aaron, thank you for your service. Difficult times, and it's not been easy, but thank you for your service to this organization.
Thank you, John. Appreciate that.
And Aaron, Charles Barbeau here. Good. I just wish you good luck in your future endeavors, and thank you for your passion and your leadership on the IWMA board for the last year and a half.
Thank you, Charles.
And thanks from the city of Pismo Beach to both of you. You had a tough row to hoe.
Indeed. From city of Morro Bay, I think both you gentlemen have done an outstanding job, and we're just getting to the fun part now. Are you sure you want to leave, Aaron? It's going to be interesting the next couple of years. So, yes, you know, if you decide to come back, maybe we'll find a spot for you. But I think you've done a great job, and the passion you bring to the IWMA is to be commended. And I appreciate the effort and the compassion you've brought to it very much.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
And Aaron,
you can see my hand.
Go ahead, Lynn.
So thank you both for all your hard work the last couple of years. And I know neither of you are retiring, so I won't say happy retirement, but enjoy a real life outside of government. So thank you.
And I'll just like to pass on my thanks as well. So Jeff, thank you for your service. And Aaron, I came in a little bit not knowing a whole lot about trash management. Your passion really inspired me to dig into it a little bit deeper, not literally, figuratively. But I just really appreciate your passion and the leadership that you gave this organization. So thank you.
Thank you. All right. I appreciate all those words. It was nice to hear from all of you. Now we're moving on to the election of officers. Unless there's anything else you want to do, Brooks.
I just don't know if Jeff wanted to say anything.
Yes, I think the second Brooks Stayer has his hand up, which I think might be Mr. Lee.
Oh.
Yes, thank you, everyone. So I just wanted to say I very much appreciated my service on the IWMA. I appreciate the service that this board continues to do. Echoing a little bit of Eric Greening's comments, I'll just say that the IWMA is a regional partnership between the cities and the county, and I think it has been largely successful. Every agency has an opportunity to have refinements and so forth, but I think the regional efforts of all agencies involved make us better together than we are as individual jurisdictions. So I look forward to continuing participating and supporting the Grover Beach representative, Karen Bright, to the IWMA, and look forward to staying in touch with everyone in the near future. So thanks for the opportunity to say hello today, and have a good rest of your meeting.
My apologies, Jeff, not seeing your name on there. I did not even realize you were there. I didn't know that there was two Brooks, one of them being you. All right. So now we are on to the election of officers.
You want me to chime in here, Aaron?
Yeah, I mean, I've got multiple things going on, so I can't read that and manage the other devices.
Okay. Yes, so essentially Aaron is the president who's leaving the board, and I just, everybody can see this graphic, correct?
Yes.
And then Robert is the vice president, and then Charles jumped in whenever Jeff had to leave his position for Karen. And so Charles is currently sitting as the past president. So we need to have three officers at the end of the day, if that's possible.
Are you taking nominations now?
Yeah, why not? Let's open it up to some nominations.
I nominate Charles Burbeau to take over as president.
Well, that's great. But I'll nominate Robert Enns.
Robert, this is Hammond. Are you willing to serve as president this time?
I would be willing to serve as president as long as Charles will step in as vice president. I'd like to take the short term. Thank you, Aaron.
I'm willing. I'm willing to do that.
I would nominate Robert Enns as president. And who do we have coming up though for vice president? I mean, we really don't have a seat at this point, do we?
Yeah, we need a third person.
Right.
Yeah. So it sounds like Charles will move in as vice president. And then we would need basically somebody that did the same thing as Charles, as far as it won't be past president, but it'll be somebody filling that third position.
Yes.
So Charles, would you serve as vice president?
Yes.
Okay, that would be my recommendation, and slate would be for Robert Enns president and Charles Burbeau vice president.
Second.
All right, we got a motion and a second. Want to do a roll call on that?
Mr. Hammond.
Aye.
Mr. Gibson.
Yes.
Ms. Arnold.
Yes.
Ms. Blake.
Yes.
Mr. Burbeau.
Yes.
Ms. Bright.
Yes.
Ms. Compton.
Yes.
Mr. Enns.
Yes.
Mr. Heller.
Yes.
Mr. Pichon.
Yes.
Mr. Storton.
Yes.
President Gomez.
Yes.
Motion passes unanimously for Mr. Enns to become president, and vice president is Mr. Burbeau.
Congratulations, gentlemen.
Thank you.
Now the third person. And I would nominate Keith Storton, just given what I have heard from him in the meetings. And then that also kind of gives us a nice sweep of North County, Mid County, South County.
I second that.
If he will accept, I will second that.
Wow, that's very kind of you. But absolutely, I'd love to participate.
Fantastic. Got a motion and a second, unless anybody wants to comment on that. All right, let's do a roll call on that.
Okay, for Mr. Storton to fill the third role, Mr. Gomez, that was you with the motion, and yes. Mr. Gibson as the second. Ms. Arnold.
Yes.
Ms. Blake.
Yes.
Mr. Burbeau.
Yes.
Ms. Bright.
Yes.
Ms. Compton. Ms. Compton.
Sorry, I was having problems. Yes.
Mr. Enns.
Yes.
Mr. Hammond.
Aye.
Mr. Heller.
Yes.
Mr. Pichong.
Yes.
Mr. Storton.
Yes.
Thank you. Passes unanimously.
Sure, I didn't hear you ask for Aaron and Bruce to give their vote.
Aaron gave the motion and Mr. Gibson was the second. Don't... Yeah.
Okay,
sorry.
I thought they had to vote as well.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although I have voted against motions I've seconded.
I apologize. Thank you.
And I can verify that.
All right. Now to the big item, the strategic plan, item 18, ordinance or authority and enforcement.
Okay, give me a second while I pull this up. Okay, can you see the screen with the strategic plan?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to begin it, if you don't mind, by reminding everybody from the motion that occurred back in August. And so there were multiple actions in that item. The first was to approve the mission, values, and vision statements and objectives 1 through 4. And then the second was the fifth objective was to be revised and brought back to give options on the following. So A was the nature and scope of ordinances and enforcement. And then B was the governance structure, i.e. the size and composition of the board. So for today, we'll be just taking the nature and scope of ordinances and enforcement. And then at a later time, we'll bring back the governance structure. And as we mentioned earlier, SB 1383 language was finally approved and it takes effect in 13 months. So staff is going to implore you to come to a decision today so that we can move forward and meet the deadline for 1383. And now I'll turn it over to Rob Hilton, our consultant with HF&H, and then he and I are going to tag team this a little bit.
Thanks, Brooks. Nice to be here with all of you. Thank you for having me again. When we last met and talked about this, as Brooks indicated, there seemed to be strong consensus around certain things that the organization would do going forward, those first four objectives and the mission and values of the organization. But this sticking point remains over sort of what the ordinance authority and the approach to handling policy issues and enforcement issues would be for the IWMA. So we're coming back to you with that specific aspect of the strategic plan. And I want to remind you, there is the broader strategic plan that includes all of the other stuff that we talked about. So we're not ignoring that. We'll be bringing that back to you probably in January or February based on your direction here. So next slide, please. As Brooks showed you in his earlier presentation, we are an organization, you are an organization organized around the idea of responding to state policy and federal policy around solid waste issues. And so as mandates come down on local agencies for local agencies to deal with, the IWMA has been a great place to house all of that and provide expertise around those things over the years. This is a fast-paced regulatory area, as Brooks identified, in California, and it will continue to be. There's quite an agenda in front of us from the various organizations and trade associations that are interested in these issues. Next slide. Most of that work and most of your work really over the next 4 or 5 years is going to be around tackling, say, 75-74% of this waste stream, everything other than that section that's called other non-recoverable materials. And really, CalRecycle is focused on the majority of these things, the food scraps, yard trimmings, commingled recyclables, C&D, textiles, and carpet, through existing mandates and programs, and especially through 1383. They are approaching the large, heavy, you know, big impact items, both from a climate perspective and from a weight, a diversion perspective. Next slide.
Bob, could we go back?
Sure.
I had a question on that. The household hazardous waste says 0%.
Rounding. Because your HHW program is so good for diverting it to the right programs, there is very, very little of it remaining in the disposal stream that goes to landfill. So little that it rounds to zero.
Thank you. I assumed that, but I just wanted to be sure.
So 1383, as we've discussed, and I'm not going to go into all of the details here again, is going to require a lot. There are a number of model programs, a number of model ordinances and policies, and ultimately by 2024, a program of monitoring and enforcement with all of the generators, all of the haulers, all of the facilities in the county. Next slide. Ultimately, jurisdictions, local jurisdictions, each of your member agencies are responsible for compliance, but you are able to delegate certain responsibilities to others, including the IWMA, possibly your collection contractors, likely your collection contractors and processing facilities, possibly county environmental health. But ultimately, if any of those delegated parties fails to act, you as a jurisdiction are ultimately responsible to the state. Next slide. We presented this to you at the strategic planning retreat when we were all there in person. And this shows you the difference between a regional model and each member agency taking this back themselves in terms of the resource obligations that are involved. And really the bottom line is you're saving about $500,000 a year by consolidating, and you're saving probably 4 to 5 full-time equivalents throughout the communities by consolidating into one agency. I won't go into all of this, but the point of this is that CalRecycle has clarified in a number of different places through the SB 1383 regulatory process that regional agencies like yours can be an umbrella over the liability for fines for 1383. So instead of each of your member agencies being individually liable for penalties under 1383, the $10,000 a day potential, you can carpool that liability by remaining a regional agency and reporting and organizing that way. So it does have some other benefit in terms of liability minimization. Next slide. And then lastly, because there was some discussion of this, though staff doesn't recommend it, and it seems that there's a consensus of the board that wants the organization to stay intact, we wanted to clarify if a jurisdiction withdraws from the JPA, there are certain obligations it will have. You'll need to have someone managing the solid waste function. You'll need to separately determine your generation baseline for AB 939 reporting purposes, because you all did that together. So there's a several $100,000 study per jurisdiction that would need to be done for that. And some time. You'd need to take over all of the programs that are currently operated by the JPA if they aren't currently being operated by your franchisees. And then you would need to adopt those policies that IWMA currently has in some way to deal with the regulations that those policies were initially adopted for. And then in addition to that, either the IWMA as a group or each jurisdiction is going to need to do all of these things for 1383, and we only have the 13 months that Brooks just described for that. So it's a big lift to do this together. It's going to be an even bigger lift for any agency that wants to go their own way with it. So at this point, I'll turn it back over to Brooks to walk you through some background on the JPA, and then we'll get into the substantive discussion.
Yeah, thanks, Rob. Yeah, I thought it would help the board in making the decision on ordinances and enforcement. So it would be helpful to consider the original intent and the history of the JPA. So we formed as a result of, in 1994, as a result of AB 939, which mandated jurisdictions divert 50% of their waste by 2020. So this was a huge lift at the time, and jurisdictions needed to create partnerships in order to effectively comply. So on this slide, I added a verbatim portion of Section 2 of the JPA, which states our purpose, and you can read it, but the intent is to meet mandates and develop programs efficiently without interfering with individual powers of that jurisdiction. And as Robin and I showed you earlier, since our formation, literally hundreds of other pieces of legislation, including dozens of new mandates, such as household hazardous waste, batteries, paints, pharmaceuticals, mattresses, et cetera, have been added. And to meet these additional mandates, the IWMA over the years passed 7 of the 9 ordinances that we have today. And I'll review those in just a minute. Also, if you look further to understand the purpose of the JPA, you can look at 2 terms that are used in it. Acts versus goals. And the term act is used 11 times in conjunction with the California Integrated Waste Management Act. In other words, meeting mandated acts was the purpose. Goal is used only 4 times in the document, and it repeatedly is used in conjunction with satisfying or complying with the mandated acts. So the primary purpose and powers of the JPA were established to meet acts mandated by the California Integrated Management Board, which is now CalRecycle. And the JPA, I believe, intentionally didn't address your local authority on major issues such as your franchise services for collection, recycling, composting, landfilling, rate setting, and ordinances. And the JPA ensured that each agency still had local control while coordinating actions to meet state mandates. getting back to the ordinances, these are the 9 existing ordinances we have on the books. And as you look at them, you see the focus has not been on passing ordinances, it has been on meeting mandates. So of the 9, 7 are the direct result of state mandated programs. The 8th regarded plastic bags, which were mandated statewide 2 years after we implemented it. So we were just a little bit ahead of the curve. And then polystyrene has already been banned in over 200 locales in California and was included in 3 pieces of legislation this year. So it's coming statewide sooner rather than later. And SB 1383 won't let up on mandated ordinances. It will add 7 more to this list. So for several years, the IWMA will be stretched thin just to comply with 1383 and will not have capacity to develop and add any new ordinances. And just talk about the history of our success. And this slide reminds you the JPA has been going for 27 years. We've made terrific progress in meeting our intended purpose. We have uniformity in our programs and messaging. We've efficiently shared the cost with each member, and everyone has paid their fair share. We have all the programs are universally accessible, and anyone can use any program or facility, regardless of the jurisdiction they are in. And we've met the 50% diversion required. We implemented dozens of new programs and mandates, and everyone has been in 100% compliance. And everyone still has local control. So you have an incredibly successful program based on the mission of meeting mandates through education. And as Rob mentioned, here are the 45 existing mandated programs. 1383 is going to add about 6 more to this list. And IWMA is currently the clearinghouse for information on all these programs. We monitor, educate businesses and the public, and prepare and submit the reports on behalf of all jurisdictions. These responsibilities either fall on the JPA or on the individual jurisdictions. So to summarize the history and the success, the agency has had a great history and it was established to meet mandates and allow for local control. And every member has been in 100% compliance during that time. It would be difficult for any agency to tackle the existing programs and implement 1383, but that effort is compounded during COVID and a recession. So we've made a lot of progress over the last 27 years and been very successful. We need to continue that success and focus on the primary mission of meeting mandates while allowing for local control. So I'll turn it back over to Rob.
All right. So in your packet, we provided some details in this working session in order to be transparent with you and with the public. Wanted to provide all of this in advance. And so we provided some more detail in it that I know is useful as we navigate this discussion today. So I'm going to hit these next slides at a fairly high level. And then if you've got questions, I'm happy to dig into the details. But what I want to do is get to your discussion because that's what's important. So really what staff and we have wrestled with over the last couple of months since talking with you is how to frame up some straw men for you to react to about different potential models for the IWMA to move forward, particularly around the establishment and enforcement of ordinances going forward. So next slide. We've got 4 models that we looked at, ranging from the IWMA dissolving and returning powers to the member agencies, either all member agencies or some jurisdiction splitting. Approach number 2 looks at just approaching mandates. So the mission of the IWMA would be to respond to state and federal mandates and not to go beyond that really in the ordinances and enforcement that it does. Model 3 would take that and then add to it in cases where there's a supermajority of the board that is in favor of going beyond the mandates and subject to an opt-out by each member agency once it's adopted, you could bring forward model programs, model policies, model ordinances, and model enforcement programs. But again, it would be subject to a higher bar for initial initiation of the projects and to each individual agency being able to opt in or opt out of that. And then the final model would be to turn over full authority of all of your programs, all of your solid waste authority to the IWMA. This is something that some regional agencies throughout the state do. It includes transitioning your franchise authorities and all of that. So as we framed this out and looked at other agencies that are successful, JPAs that are successful with solid waste management throughout the state, these four models are used in a number of different agencies. We do not recommend either one or four. Based on the discussion with the board at the prior meetings, it seems like your consensus is circling around either a mandates approach or a mandates and models approach with some guardrails on it. So we've framed out some straw men for you in the next couple of slides. They're just that. There's no pride in authorship. If you want to move things around or edit things, that's your prerogative as the board. So if we go to the next slide, I can walk you through very quickly. We went through each of the functional areas that the authority needs to, or the member agencies need to operate in related to state mandated programs, reporting, operation of programs, education, ordinances, compliance monitoring, and enforcement. And we've laid out on here what the roles of the member agencies versus the IWMA would be in each of those functional areas under the two models. Similarly, on the next slide, we have functional areas for non-mandated programs. And so you can see one of the biggest distinctions between the prior slide and this slide is that we're establishing a much higher bar in the mandates and models approach for these non-mandated activities, and we're allowing those, or we're establishing those guardrails for opt-in or opt-out. So again, I'm not going to belabor this. It was in your packet in detail. On the next slide, we've got a little bit of a summary that might be a good landing page to facilitate the discussion over. So really what we're hoping to do is foster a discussion with the board about what your preferences are between these two models, and if you might tweak one of the models to get to something that works for your particular agencies. So with that, I'll turn it back over to you.
Thank you. I do have a question around the supermajority part of that straw man that you brought up. Why would we have a supermajority if you also have the guardrail built in of the opt-in, opt-out?
Your current governance documents have sort of a form of supermajority requirement with respect to the Board of Supes participation. And so we were sort of borrowing on that. It's not an essential feature. You could do one or the other, or you could do the belt and the suspenders.
Okay. Well, I'll lead it off. I prefer that model without the supermajority. I think with the opt-in, opt-out, that gives every agency the ability to participate. And that's to me, that's kind of the compromise between this board is that seemed to be the struggling point that I had seen. Obviously, we'll find out as more people chime in. Anybody who wants to, is more than welcome to.
Mr. President Gomez, this is Charles Bourbeau. Yeah. I kind of initially asked myself that question as well, but you know, if the rub here has been about the IWMA board adopting ordinances not mandated by the state. And not just with 1383 coming down the road with things that we need to focus on, our staff is somewhat of a limited resource. And if we were to, if a majority, wanted to adopt an ordinance, even though the other agencies could opt out, it's still an expenditure of the staff's time and dedication to involve the IWMA in a non-mandated ordinance. And so I could see that it'd be desirable that if we were to adopt a non-mandated ordinance, even with individual agencies having the option to opt out of enforcement in their jurisdiction, it might be a good idea to have a considerable majority vote for such a thing.
Okay.
President
Ms. Gomez, Anna, it looks like you.
Oh. Yeah, can you tell? I can't tell on this particular, with the screens up, if you can see me or not. So I'm going to go ahead and ask Rob. Rob, would you say that out of the summary of options presented, that what was originally written up, the JPA was formed around probably the closest one is item number two, and that the IWMA would monitor ordinances related to the federal or state mandates. And then you already told us that written in 1383, it really ultimately the responsibility lies with each member agency anyway, correct?
Two things. So yes, you could definitely take the interpretation that the original JPA was written around mandates only. If you look at the JPA and the LAFCO documents, it's a little bit more confusing because it assigns solid waste powers, police powers around solid waste. It assigns a lot to the IWMA that looks a little bit more like the full authority model, with the exception of the ability to franchise. So that's been part of the confusion, is there are some aspects that look just like full authority. And then in other aspects, as Brooks pointed out, it is very focused on compliance with the act, and specifically says we don't intend to override local authority. So I think that confusion between the documents has been part of the issue, and one of the really good reasons to at some point update the JPA itself to clarify what you mean. With respect to 1383 enforcement, yes, jurisdictions are responsible unless you have a regional agency, and CalRecycle's clarified that for us. So if you delegate the authority for this to the regional agency with the IWMA is, then the IWMA becomes the authority. That's not true of all solid waste JPAs, only solid waste JPAs that are recognized as regional agencies with CalRecycle. So you have sort of special status there.
Which we are. We are recognized. So I guess where I have been vocal is, and it's not so much on the enforcement end, as long as we're dealing with federal or state mandated ordinances. I have been on principle opposed to the fact that this body is legislating over the member agencies, whether they want to be legislated over or not. So where I'm trying to go is simply if any member agency is free on their own to create any ordinance they want, they can go far beyond mandates or not. All of us are subject to the mandates, and whether the enforcement then is done by the IWMA or it's done by the jurisdictions themselves or any other agency, whether it's a state agency, a federal agency, or some other code enforcement or something like that, it doesn't really matter because these are already, these are mandates, they're written into law. Otherwise, the jurisdictions themselves, I believe, should be the ones to go beyond that, and it should be their own electeds doing that. What we're finding in the last couple of years is that the majority of the County Board of Supervisors, for example, can vote against an ordinance, and it will pass in the IWMA, and that creates a situation where half of or more of our population and our rural areas of the county are being mandated by folks that haven't been elected in those areas at all and may be creating these ordinances to deal with some urban issue. And we find that our constituents in the unincorporated areas are falling, or they become mandates countywide. So I think everyone knows that my my concern has been that I don't think that's fair, that's right. And if the member agencies are willing to continue to, or are willing to work under the original, what I think is the original intent and the spirit of this JBA in the first place, then we would be working on the entire county and every city in it complying with state and federal mandates. And if particular jurisdictions want to go beyond, they are welcome to do so, but not welcome to create and then enforce ordinances that are drummed up within the IWMA over areas that may not like that. So when we talk about dissolving, I don't look at it as dissolving. I just look at it, for example, in my case, is the county opting out and leaving the IWMA if legislation is going to be, if we're going to continue to legislate over the rural areas of the county, and the legislating is really being the legislation is really being passed by city council members or special district members that are not elected by the areas that they're legislating over. That's my gripe. So I suppose we could say one member agency could pull out of the JPA, and it could, the members that want to stay in that like that sort of thing happening to their constituents could stay together.
Chairman Gomez, Hammond.
Yeah, Mr. Hammond.
Yeah. Again, I'm following along, obviously, with what Debbie's saying. But again, I clearly, in my opinion, think that we've drifted away from Model 2, where it was mandates only, and morphed into something that really a lot of the constituents in Paso Robles had a major issue with. And that was essentially, you know, the authority, you know, has free will to enforce, pass local ordinance beyond what the JPA had been doing, which goes back to Debbie's thought about how unelected officials or other people from outside that agency is telling them what to do. We have physically agreed from our council to research this through J3 with figuring out what's going to cost us to do this. And we're fully willing to move ahead. I hope, again, I feel IWMA has great value to Paso Robles. But if we can get back on track with, you know, mandates only, which is, again, what we need to do. We live in California. We need to stay within those regulations and, of course, feds, too. But if we can get back to that and keep away from mandates and models, again, the issue, though, is, you know, keep it simple. If you do the mandates and models, then it's one more thing for that council to have to opt out and work on or do something about. I clearly think the IWMA is designed to show different models, different things that are starting to appear. That's, I think, part of the job here of our agency is to research and figure out new ideas for the different agencies to look at. And it's clear that they can clearly add to their ordinance and regulations from these models. It doesn't have to necessarily be forced upon them if they feel like they want to do it. So if we can get back to that kind of a model, I'm definitely wanting to report back to our council about what happens today. So I'm good enough at this point. I'll listen on. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. President.
Gomez. Oh,
go ahead.
Who's got the floor?
Your choice. Go ahead, Jeff.
I'm really proud of myself, Robert, because I figured out how to raise my hand here on Zoom, but it looks like nobody else is.
So. Okay, I can't figure it out.
Awesome. No, you did figure it out, Lynn. I think
I just go like this.
So I can't see it, even if you do it. So let me.
So is this how you want us to do it?
This works.
That works.
Every time. Thank you, Robert. I appreciate you letting me go here. You know, my concern at this point is I think we've put some really meaningful ordinances in place that Morro Bay supports. Some of them have not gotten into effect and won't go into effect, I believe, until July 1st. But if everything we've done to date can be enforced or rather go into effect, you know, I don't want to go backwards on anything. You know, that said, I think a mandates only approach going forward is going to be a lot. I mean, I think we can have a lot to deal with when you look at the number of legislative actions that have come out of Sacramento in the last 15 years. It's staggering. And we still don't know what the cost of implementing SB 1383 is going to be for us. So I see IWMA's primary role going forward is to meet the mandates, and we will be challenged doing that. I just don't want to go backwards or undo anything that we've done to date. So that's where I'm at. Robert, go ahead.
Okay. Thank you, Jeff. I tend to agree. I'm looking very favorably at the selection number two. I agree with John Hammonds and Debbie Arnold. The 1383 demands are, as you say, are going to be burdensome. We're going to need additional personnel. I think it's going to be tough just to get all this done in the next 13 months. And we're still allowing individual agencies to do whatever they want to do. I don't like the idea of being an enforcer, not at least not at the level of the IWMA. The other thing is that I think I wrote in the letter I wrote to the board that I thought you got a lot more out of your constituents by providing rewards rather than punishment. And I think that when we get this in place and get our strategic plan ironed out, then we'll have to go back and line the JPA up so it fits with the strategic plan. So I'm looking strongly at number two.
I like Mr. Well, all right, let's go. Mr. Storton, it looks like Mr. Pashong, you've had your hand up in the little window for a little while. So I'm not sure who had it first because it's hard to tell.
Lynn's been waving.
You better let Lynn Compton go or we'll all pay a price.
Yeah, I would defer to Lynn.
Because I could slap you with this hand.
Let's go Lynn, Mr. Storton, Mr. Pashong. There's the order.
Okay, well, I certainly didn't expect to jump to the beginning of the line here. So I'm in favor of option two. And I do, you know, when I read the JPA two, it seemed to me like we were overstepping our bounds on things in the past. And I do now, after today's explanation, understand why there is some confusion, you know, with some additional roles that were given. So, you know, I think I understand that. I also think that there's some history in why we're in the situation that we're in. And Brooks, this has nothing to do with you, but there has been some distrust by certain members of the board with past management. And so, you know, we were looking at, are we overstepping our bounds? Is this just being railroaded through? And so I think that's why we're here. So the problem that I see with number three is, then if you were to get a super majority that wanted to do something, or say four or five cities want to do something on their own, then they're going to petition the IWMA to do it. And because the economy is a scale and it's they're going to argue it's better to do that way. So we're back in the same position that we're in before. So I prefer mandates only, and I think we're going to be inundated with, you know, a lot coming up. Jeff's question was an interesting one about anything, you know, past stays. And so I guess I'd like to hear what legal counsel has to say about that, too, because that is an interesting one. But I wanted to go back to something Debbie said, too. You know, being in a very rural, unincorporated area, the needs and wants and desires are very, very different than a rural area like San Luis Obispo. Not saying right or wrong, just saying completely different constituency base and different attitudes about things. So what's right for my area may not necessarily be right for somebody else's area, and vice versa. What's right for Aaron's San Luis Obispo may not be right for here. So I think that's the problem that we have. And I think that this is not just a problem on this board. I think we see it on other boards too, that we sit on. When you're elected directly from the constituency, they expect you to represent them, and they think they're electing you and that you're going to have some impact. Then when you get put on a board to make decisions and your vote is completely diluted and your rural vote is diluted to the extent that the dominant city vote, which may not be congruent to what you want is the deciding vote, it's very frustrating for the constituents for that to happen. They're, you know, they have no option because their elected representative can't represent them because their vote is being diluted. So that's what I hear all the time. And so I'm would be very happy if we went with mandates only. And I just think there's problems down the road. That doesn't stop any city or jurisdiction, including the county, from doing, excuse me, something that they want to do that's different and knock themselves out if they want to do that. So those are my comments.
All right. I think I'm up next. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, great. Thank you. All right. Thank you. I really do appreciate the history lesson on the IWMA, and there's some things I didn't completely understand as far as past efforts. And I really am impressed with the amount of work that has been put into this organization to get us to where we are today. A lot of good things have happened, and I think this group represents all of those good things. You know, we're a group that only meets once a month and sometimes every other month. And although there's a diversity of energy that we have some different perspectives, I really think that reliance upon Brooks and his professional staff helping us lead us in that direction in a very specific direction is important. So moving forward, and certainly in the grand scheme of things, for waste management and recycling, I think we're a small but caring group of cities within the county that are confronted with a lot of challenges yet opportunities, but we have to meet the requirements for SB 1383 and another of other mandates. I know for me individually as a representative of the city of AG, or even if we were to splinter into smaller groups, our ability to meet these challenges would be hindered with cost and time and resources. And there's no way we as an individual city could meet that those requirements. My desire, and I think it's the most responsible choice, is to stay together and seek and improve with the efficiencies that we already have going, and allow Brooks and his staff to move us forward in that direction. I think it would be important also as part of our strategic plan and these discussions as part of staying together is that we take a like-minded voice and work with other larger cities and counties and JPAs to solidify our messaging with legislative changes that allow us to address packaging and distribution efforts across the whole state. So we're dealing with a consistency of messaging and not just a hodgepodge of different things that we all have to keep track of and try to adhere to. As far as the opt-in and opt-out, I'm a little confused to what that would mean as to the difference of just a city that has an interest in pursuing its own ordinance. Why wouldn't they just go ahead and do that then? I think that opting in and opting out puts a lot of pressure of resources and time and money on our JPA and Brooks and his staff, when alternatively a single city or a group of cities could go in together and plan for some other ordinances that they felt were important to their community. I think that's all I had to offer at this point, and I would be in favor of the mandates only at this point. Thank you.
Mr. Pashong, you are up to bat.
All right. I would also be supportive of the number two mandates only. And I think it. I think that's the way the direction we should go in, because I do believe that they are going to be, there's going to be a ton of things coming down from Sacramento over the next few years. And plus, you know, what we know is coming, and it's going to be a pretty tough time. So I would recommend that we move in that direction today.
As of now, that's the only person that I saw with their hand up. If anybody else would like to speak.
Mr. Barbeau is raising his hand.
Yeah, Aaron, just one comment and perhaps question for staff in regards the word models. In some cases, the IWMA may provide like education on something that's not part of an ordinance, but provide, you know, education to encourage whether it's litter reduction or further diversion or whatever. And I would think that's a positive thing. And I think in the past, I've heard Supervisor Arnold say, like in relation to styrofoam, not objecting to providing education on that, but objecting to imposing a mandatory ordinance. And so I'm wondering whether or not that would need to be included. If we just go with number two, would that preclude the IWMA, from involving itself in education on certain things, that it wouldn't go to the extent of an ordinance in any way, but just provide education on some matters?
Yeah, that's how we built the straw man for number two, that for non-mandated items that the IWMA could provide countywide education, but that education would not be about enforcement, and that any education about enforcement actions in the mandates only model would be done by the member agency that passed that non-mandated policy. So you could have, for example, education encouraging folks not to use expanded polystyrene foam containers countywide, but it wouldn't necessarily talk about the enforcement that goes on in the jurisdictions that are doing that. So that is the concept there in number two.
All right, thank you then. Thank you.
Chairman Gomez, Hammond question to Rob. Rob, if we do, sounds like the consensus is we're really leaning obviously to summary of number two, mandated only. At that point, we're gonna give direction back to staff. Would this have to go back then to our GPA agreement? In other words, Jeff, maybe you might chime in too. The way it's currently written, would this have to be rewritten, or how long has it been since anybody's even looked at the GPA is another question.
If the question's to me, I think it, whether you have to or not, and I'll let Jeff speak to that, I think you should. I think there are probably a number of cleanup things that you'll find over the next, say, 6 to 9 months as you're wrestling with how you work together on 1383, that would be useful to do a cleanup pass at the Joint Exercise of Powers Agreement to make sure that aligns with what you want in the strategic plan, how you operationally are working together, and how you see things going forward. So I think it's good to do whether you have to or not.
President Gomez, may I chime in?
Yes.
Thank you. Director Hammond, thank you for the question. I was expecting that. Your JPA is dated May of 1994. We can tell by the reason we have been where we are right now is because there's confusion in the JPA, even in itself has internal inconsistencies. I think the importance of today is to gain consensus on your policy and your strategic plan, which I think does still fit comfortably within the JPA, but we would, I think, not be doing your district, your agency a service by not going back and cleaning up the JPA to be more in line with the vision that your board is currently expressing to guide not just your existing board and staff, but future boards and staff. I wouldn't say let's do it today. Let's get on board together and then come back when we feel we've got a little momentum.
Right. That's kind of what I thought. And given the board direction back to staff, to develop the strategic plan moving forward with Rob, and then handed it back over to Jeff for, cleanup, so to speak, of the current GPA. Yeah. Thank you.
Ms. Arnold? President
Gomez, could I ask a quick question as well?
Yeah.
So back to Charles's questions, I just wanted to also bring up, and Brooks can confirm, in my conversations with Brooks lately, we discussed going back to that option for jurisdictions to legislate, that the IWMA would also be at their disposal, not only from the education side, but also to help develop those model ordinances for, in other words, if any of the member agencies wanted to go beyond state mandates or federal mandates and adopt a particular ordinance in their jurisdiction, that the IWMA would be a resource for them to create the model ordinance that they're looking for, and they could take that to their member jurisdiction at any time and pass it there.
President Gomez?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right, Debbie. That's, we consider ourselves to be a service agency. So any jurisdiction or nonprofit basically that contacts us, or businesses for that matter, and want alternatives or to research what others are doing, we provide that research and information to them now. We would continue to do that.
And where I could see that even as an example, as a concrete example, maybe in some of the rural areas, this might be something that, as opposed to most of the time, we're talking about things that are coming out of the urban areas and when it comes to waste. But in the rural areas, there may come a day that some time that the rural areas see that they need to be more firm in some way on green waste and those kinds of things. People putting, you know, vegetation into their wrong boxes, those kinds of things. We might see something like that happening more in the rural areas than the urban areas. I'm just throwing this out as an example where we might differ, and different electeds representing different areas may come to the IWMA asking for help with a particular particular ordinance that they might want to pass that wouldn't even be necessary or at the top of the list in another part of the county. So I just want to be sure everybody understands that the IWMA will be there for every jurisdiction, every member agency, to help them with model ordinances that they might want to pass in their particular jurisdiction.
Could I ask a question here?
Go ahead.
Of Rob Hilton. When you started, Rob, you mentioned this particular item, the issue of mandates only or mandates and models, but there was one other thing that you were looking for board direction today, was there not?
I think the key thing that we're looking for today is your direction on which of these models or some tweak to one of these models you'd like us to move forward with in the strategic plan. You at the last meeting, your board at the last meeting identified the issue of the governance structure of the board, the number of members, the executive committee. And as we wrestled with the bundle of issues that we're presenting you today, we decided it was bigger than we wanted to do both of those in one meeting, and that there were some dependencies in that governance model about how you decided to work together here. And so wanted to kind of get your input on this and then bring back that item on the governance model. I don't think that affects the strategic plan, but it would affect, for example, Jeff's work in revising the JPA agreement.
Okay. From what I've heard then, I would be willing to put forward a motion for option number two, the mandates only.
So, sorry, correct me if I'm wrong. This is just a feedback session. Do we have to give a motion for anything?
Not if it's, well, we can ask Jeff.
No, I don't think you need, I'm looking at the way this is drafted by Mr. Stair. It looks like you're just receiving staff direction. And I think right now you have a consensus. If Mr. Enns wants to make a motion to determine consensus, he's certainly free to do that. But it's not an action item.
Okay, if it's not an action item, then I think we have a direction. Well,
I just to be really clear, I would second Robert's motion that we say on this date and time and in our minutes that we had a consensus on option number two. I just don't know if that's true unless we kind of take a head count in some form or fashion.
I understand, Supervisor Arnold. It looks like Mr. Rob Enns has made a motion for number two, and would you provide a second? Are you providing
a second? I would like to provide a second. Then we can call for a roll call and make it very clear in our minutes what direction we were.
Okay, that works for me.
A second for discussion?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think, again, Robert, making that direction to staff that you would want to use the mandate model only, but also maybe, again, to revise the 1994 GPA in that motion as well.
To be brought back to the board.
Okay, I can include that as a part of the motion.
And I'll second that addition.
Thank you, Debbie.
All right, we've got a motion and a second. Roll call.
Robert Enns?
Yes.
Debbie, Ms. Arnold?
Yes.
Ms. Blake? Ms. Blake?
Can you hear me now?
Yes, thank you.
Okay, I have a question, please, before I vote yes or no. Are you asking us to indicate our interest? You're not asking us to pass a resolution, are you?
No, you can't pass a resolution in this because it's not actually agendized.
Okay, fine.
You're basically just making a motion to give that this is the direction and we are taking a vote on that. Again, it's nothing that can be done other than direction for a JPA change and that it will come back at a future agenda item or future agenda.
Okay, then I'm voting yes.
Mr. Burbeau?
Yes.
Ms. Bright?
Yes.
Ms. Compton?
Yes.
Mr. Gibson?
Yes.
Mr. Hammond?
Aye.
Mr. Heller?
Yes.
Mr. Pichon?
Yes.
Mr. Storton?
Yes.
President Gomez?
No.
Motion passes 11-1.
Okay.
Is it 11-1 or 11-2?
I heard one no. Was there another no?
Sheila Blake.
Oh, I'm
Sheila
sorry.
Said yes.
No, I'm sorry, Ms. Blake. I thought
she said yes.
Okay.
Oh, no. All right.
She was just asking for clarity, so it might have sounded like no off the bat.
Okay. So I have 11-1.
Correct.
No. So moving on to future agenda items and member comments. I'm going to make a comment simply because it was my last time around with you guys. just seeing what we have just gone through, as somebody that's been pretty entrenched in the conversation around waste and recycling and plastics, I hope that this board understands the gravity of the issues that we are going to be confronting and currently are confronting that we seem to have missed along the way in this argument of what a government agency should and should not do. I think great conversation, and obviously everybody wants to represent their organization, but nobody really brought up the fact that we have a mountain of issues that are coming down the pipe down with the realities of what chemical compositions are in the plastics that we are dealing with and what the health repercussions of those are, as well as the environmental impact repercussions. We talk about educating people. There is no amount of education that will change this behavior in the time that we have left to do so. Education, if you actually look at it from a budgetary item, it's one of the least efficient ways to deal with this issue because nobody can really wrap their head around it even from a professional standpoint because markets change, the way that people view what can and cannot be recycled change, our waste haulers and MRF representatives, their messaging changes. All of this comes to us and then we somehow have to disseminate that out to the public and think that they will have an understanding. It's taken me several years just to get to the point of getting fact-based answers on where a lot of our waste is going. And even then, it's a very gray area, especially when it comes to recycling. Some people say that there are local markets that take it all. If you look at California as a whole, a recent report came out that 75% of our recycling is still going offshore. That may not be, for our local jurisdiction, it's hard to say, but we know that that's happening on a statewide level. And we also know that the global impact of that is drastic. You can't blame other countries for mismanagement of waste when it's our waste that they're taking and it's our waste that we're actually selling to them. So it's kind of my closing piece is that I hope that we realize we can't educate our way out of this and that we are a waste management authority. I hope that people take the time to understand how our systems work and work with the haulers and understand that our scope of work within them and how we create our contracts with them have a vast impact on what the future of waste here is going to be. Because we have certainly not solved the issues around recycling or how we manage plastic. And we've been claiming that we've been doing it for quite some time. It just isn't true. So those are my thoughts.
Mr. Chairman?
Yeah.
If I might, let me thank you for being the conscience of this agency. I'm going to miss having you here. This agency could be doing much more than it's chosen to do with the vote we've just taken, but such is the nature of practical politics in this day and age. I hope that you remain engaged from your position as a citizen. And again, I thank you for bringing these issues to us and speaking with the passion and the conviction and the knowledge that you have. I will miss your presence, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Gibson. I appreciate that. So if we don't have any other comments or future agenda items, that will bump us into closed session.
How are we doing closed session? We do it differently in a lot of different meetings. So how are we doing that?
If I may, everyone will leave the meeting except myself, and then Barbara is going to transfer it over to me, and then I'll notify her when the meeting is over, and then if there's any reportable action, we will post it on the website. So essentially, we're going to close the meeting to the public at this point and turn it over to me.
Do we stay on the same link that we're on?
Yeah, you don't need to do anything.
Okay.
And just so for the benefit of the public, any reportable action will be posted on the website.
Do I need to take public comment for closed session?
Please do.
Okay, so we are taking public comment for closed session item 20. Okay, it looks like Janine's hand is raised. Hey, Janine, you should be able to unmute yourself.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Can anybody hear me? Okay. Let's see. Do you hear a buzz in the background?
No. You're fine.
Okay. I wanted to give an input into the discussion about the JPA and the IWMA, and you didn't call for public comment. So I'd like to know if I can add my comment right now.
Just one for clarification, we did call for public comment. That was at the very beginning of
that. Right. That was at the very beginning. But I thought after you discuss, then the public gets to come in and make a comment.
Well, we opened it up for public comment. So that was the time to make a comment.
Darn it.
By the public.
I wanted to be able to comment after I heard your, the board discussion. So that's why I would like to make a comment from this meeting.
Okay, make your comment.
We've all been talking about this, and I, for one, watching the IWMA for about 4 years, have been astounded, let's say, at the many details and intricacies of handling an agency and all the stuff that the IWMA does. Ms. Arnold and Lynn Compton talked about needs and wishes and desires that their communities might not have the same as cities. But we're talking about trash, recycling, hazardous wastes, and green waste. We're not talking about needs, desires, and wishes, and like projects. So we're all consumers, we're all human buyers, and we all buy basically at the same stores. We bring home the same products, and the same products need to go somewhere, whether they're recycled trash or green waste. So this is what we're talking about, getting rid of our waste management of all of the products that we humans are buying. I'm concerned that out there in a community or rural population are under a different regulation than somebody in the city, but we're all a very fluid community and we'll go travel out to the rural part of the town. And those people will come to the beach. If there's different regulations from within 15 miles of each other, it creates confusion. Why don't we look at this as a population going forward, addressing our critical need of the enormous amount of trash that is being created? We're a growing population. We're getting hundreds of new people by the month coming in from Sacramento, from Los Angeles, from San Francisco, where they know these things. And yet they might move to Pozo and nothing's regulated. Come over to San Luis. You know, we need to look for the future, be progressive, deal with this stuff as a nation, not just isolated Santa Margarita. So that's my part. Let's be together. Thank you.
Thank you. All right, do we have any comments on the actual closed session?
There is no public comment.
Okay, then at this time we will move into closed session. Thank you to the public that participated. And I'll see you somewhere not on these Zoom meetings.
And just for the members of the public, President Gomez, the closed session is on Government Code 54956.9A. This is conference legal counsel in regards to the litigation matter of Knutson versus the County of SLO et al.
And Barbara, can you let us know whenever we are in closed session?
I will do so.